Welcome to the Berry & Lamberts Solicitors Podcast Series, Commercial Law and Dispute Resolution. In this series, we explain in everyday language how to go about planning for certain commercial scenarios, as well as explaining in more detail common disputes that may need legal resolution. Berry & Lamberts Solicitors, we're right by you through the good times, challenging times, and sad times.
I'm Paul Harvey, and I have the pleasure today of being with Paul Reeder, who is a managing partner of Berry & Lambert Solicitors. It's great to have you with me today. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Could you please describe your role in a bit more detail that you have with Berry & Lambert?
Well, I think the managing partner role I can describe as when things go right, I'm part of the team that makes it all happen. And when things go wrong, it's my fault. But no, I work with a team here running the Berry & Lamberts, which is really good, interesting work. But I also head up the company commercial department here. So I advise businesses throughout their life journeys, really.
And today, what we're going to be talking about is the agreements between owners of a business and how they intend to run the business going forward. What is a shareholders' agreement?
A shareholders' agreement is a document which sets out the agreement between the owners of a limited company as to how they're going to run the business and how they will look to manage key issues in the business as they arise.
And how do they differ from the articles of association of a company?
So the articles of association of a company is the constitution of a company, and every company has one. The reason why people have shareholder agreements which go alongside the articles is that you can put things in the shareholder agreement which you wouldn't usually expect to see in the articles of association. So such as restriction on the owners should they leave the business. You can put dividend policies into shareholders agreement, and what matters will require the approval of all or a certain majority of the owners. So there's a bit more flexibility in a shareholders agreement than what you have in articles of association. Secondly, the shareholders' agreement are usually private documents. Articles of association are public documents, which can be found at Companies House, but generally the contents of shareholders' agreements don't need to be publicly available. And thirdly, they can be easier to amend. To amend the articles of association of a company, you need to pass a special resolution, you need to publicise the new articles, there's a formal procedure to go through. Whereas with shareholders' agreement, if all parties agree to the amendment, there can be a change made and that will be binding on all the parties. So they can be a little bit more flexible.
What are the usual terms that you find within a shareholders' agreement?
So when we put a shareholders agreement together, we're usually looking at putting in their clauses about the decisions that require the consent of all or a specific majority of the shareholders. You would look to see whether there's clauses in there giving shareholders or certain shareholders the right to be appointed as directors of the company. You'll look at clauses as to what happens if a shareholder wants to sell their shares, what happens if a shareholder leaves the company or is made bankrupt, what happens on the death of the shareholder. As I said before, what restrictions there might be on a shareholder if they are to leave the company, what happens if an offer is made to buy the company, and sometimes you'd also see a dividend policy set out in a shareholder's agreement.
In terms of a company then taking on your services, is it something that they could try and put together themselves, and what would be the pitfalls if they did?
I think the benefits of coming to Berry & Lamberts to talk about shareholders' agreements is that we deal with a lot of businesses on a day-to-day basis, and we're pretty good now at looking at businesses and saying these are the questions that you as business owners need to ask yourselves going forward. These are the things that businesses are thinking about, and we actually get the owners of businesses, and they're usually new businesses, really thinking about issues which will affect the company and their business going forward. Generally, I think when people set up businesses, they're looking at what they're producing, what they're selling, what services they're providing, but they're not really looking at how a business develops and the external factors and internal factors which will affect that. And we can actually bring the specialism to them and say, look, these are the things that you need to be thinking about when you're actually running a company, rather than just providing the services or the products that you want to provide.
Now, in terms of the decisions that require the consent of all or a majority of shareholders, what kind of things would you be looking at?
So, yeah, you'd look at putting into a shareholders agreement probably a clause which says that certain decisions will require the consent of all or a specified majority of the shareholders. And usually you're looking at things like capital expense, changing the nature of the business, moving premises, employing or dismissing key members of staff, acquisitions and mergers. And essentially, it's the big decisions which could impact the value of the shareholders' investment. So at that point, the shareholders will say, well, look, we're not going to do these things unless I have the input and consent to it. We document that within the shareholders' agreement so it's clear what these big decisions are and who needs to be involved and consent to those decisions being passed.
Now, you also said that they can ensure that a shareholder has a right to be appointed as a director. Aren't shareholders entitled to be directors in any event?
No. So a shareholder is the owner of the business, but the director or directors are the people who actually run the business. It's very much, I think, the common analogy here is owning a car. You can own a car, but you don't have to be the driver. And just like that, you can own a company, but you don't have to be the director of the company. And directors can only be appointed by the board of directors or by a majority vote of the shareholders. So if there are a number of shareholders, you can't guarantee that you will be voted onto the board. And it's important for owners at times to be on the board because that's where all the big decisions happen. So they often want to be involved in the day-to-day running of the company so that they can be involved in these big decisions which affect their investment. So through a shareholders agreement, we can put in place a mechanism which says essentially, if any of the shareholders or key shareholders want to be directors, then the other shareholders, in whatever capacity they're acting, have to exercise their voting rights to ensure that those people are appointed as directors. So you effectively enshrine that shareholder's right to be on the board of directors.
And you mentioned that a shareholder agreement can also deal with a situation where an owner wishes to sell his shares.
So yes, when people set up in business together, they obviously choose who they want to be in business with. And what they don't really want is someone, one of their co-owners, to sell their shares to an unknown third party, at which point they then have a business partner who they know nothing about, may not want to be in business with. So in order to prevent that scenario, what the shareholder agreement usually provides is that if any shareholder wishes to sell their shares, then they must first offer those shares to the existing shareholders, either at the price that they're prepared to sell to a third party, or if the remaining shareholders elect, at a price which is determined usually by the company's accountant. And that just ensures that the remaining shareholders can retain control over their business. And if the remaining shareholders do not want to buy or can't afford to buy the shares, then at that point, the selling shareholder can usually then sell their shares to a third party. So these are called preemption provisions. So essentially, the remaining shareholders have the right of first refusal to buy any shares. But they can also be used in order to tie investors in for a period. So usually when business owners set up their company and start off the business, they usually have an understanding. Often it's unsaid because everyone's thinking, well, I'm in this for a period. I'm assuming all my co-owners want to be in it for the same period. But they all have this understanding that they want to contribute to the growth of the business, at least for a period. And they all invest their time and money into the business on the basis of that understanding. So if one person looks to leave early on in the life of a business, that can often disrupt the initial plans of all the owners. So what you can do is insert a clause saying, well, look, if an owner wants to leave and sell their shares within a period, it can be 6 months, it can be a year, whatever they choose, then they must transfer their shares back to the remaining shareholders, either at a nominal value or a reduced value. And that can be a useful tool because it dissuades a shareholder from leaving the business because they might have to transfer their shares back to the remaining shareholders at a reduced value. And if shareholders talk about what their intentions are in terms of how long they want to stay in the business, this can be a useful tool just to cement that relationship so everyone is kind of tied in and committed to the business.
And I'm sure that there are circumstances where a shareholder can be required to sell their shares.
So yeah, as you're in business, certain things can happen along the way, which you may not expect to happen. such as a shareholder being made bankrupt. If someone is made bankrupt, then all their assets go to their trustee in bankruptcy. And of course, at that point, the remaining shareholders would have a trustee in bankruptcy involved in the business as a shareholder. You probably don't want that. So you would put a clause in the shareholders agreement saying, if a shareholder is made bankrupt, then the remaining shareholders have the option to buy the shares at that point in time. Equally, if a shareholder becomes errant and maybe starts breaching the shareholders agreement, then at that point, you may not want to be carrying on in business with this person. So at that point, if there is a substantial breach of the shareholders agreement, you may then look to say, well, at that point, you're compelled to sell your shares back to us. And equally, if the owners are working in the business, and it's the understanding that you all should work in the business as well as own the business, if one of them wants to leave and work elsewhere, then at that point, you would usually have a provision saying that they are obliged to sell their shares back to the remaining shareholders. And again, that can be at market value, or it can be at a reduced rate, depending on the circumstances under which the shareholders are leaving at that point.
And you mentioned that a shareholder agreement can deal with a shareholder's share or shares when they die. Isn't this dealt with under a will, perhaps?
What a will does is, I mean, essentially under a will, any person can leave their assets to whoever they like. And usually they will leave their assets to members of their family. So whilst a will enable people to pass their shares on in that way, it leads to two potential problems. The first is the remaining shareholders may not want the deceased family to be in business with them, essentially a business partner with them. So they're forced to have, in this circumstance, the deceased shareholder's family as owners of the business. But secondly, the deceased shareholder's family members may not want the shares. They may not want to be involved in the business, and they may actually want the cash value of the shares.
How can a shareholder agreement help with this particular problem?
So in order to deal with this, what you usually see in a shareholder's agreement is what's known as a cross option. And that provides that upon the death of the shareholder, the family members who have inherited the shares have an option to compel the remaining shareholders to buy those shares. But you also then have the cross option that the remaining shareholders have an option to compel the family to sell the shares to them. So essentially, the family member doesn't want to be in business with the remaining shareholders. They can compel the shareholders to buy those shares and give them the money for them. But equally, if the remaining shareholders don't want the family to be in business with them, they can say to them, okay, you've got to sell the shares to us.
And how will the remaining shareholders pay for the shares if these options are exercised?
That's usually the problem that you run into in these situations, and it can be dealt with in one of two ways. Either we put provision within the shareholders agreement that when the option is exercised, the payment for the shares can take place over a period of time, can be a number of years, can be a number of months. It just depends on what the value of the shares are likely to be and what the liquidity of the remaining shareholders looks like. So you may want to put in payment over time. If that doesn't look like it's going to work, then what you can also do is put in life assurance in place for the shareholders. And what happens then is that when a shareholder dies, the insurance policy pays out a sum of money to the remaining shareholders. The remaining shareholders then exercise the option to buy the shares from the family, and they use the money that they have received from the insurance policy to purchase those shares from the family. So the family ends up with the money and the remaining shareholders end up with the shares.
And you've also mentioned that a shareholder agreement can deal with circumstances where an offer is made to purchase the company.
Usually when people want to buy a company, they usually want to buy all the shares in the company so that they own the whole of it. And what they don't want are minority shareholders who they don't really want to be in business with. So what you could look at in those circumstances in a shareholders agreement is if an offer is made for the purchase of the company, which a majority shareholder or a majority number of shareholders wish to accept, then you can compel the other shareholders to sell their shares to that buyer. And usually what you put in is a provision saying in those circumstances, the minority shareholders are compelled to sell their shares so long as they get the same price per share as the majority shareholders are getting for it. And that just means that there can be a clean sale to a buyer. Those are called drag-along rights because essentially the majority shareholder or shareholders have the right to drag along the minority shares in a company purchase.
Okay, we've covered quite a lot of ground here, and there's a lot to be covered clearly in a shareholder agreement and a lot for the shareholders to think about as well. And is there a specific time that shareholders should look to create an agreement?
Well, a shareholder's agreement is just that. It's an agreement between the shareholders. So long as everybody is getting along and happy to agree, it can be created at any time. My advice would be to look to have one created as early as possible in the business journey. Usually at that point, everyone's got ideas, they're all getting along, they're excited about the business going forward. And it means you're more likely to agree on what the vision for the company is going forward. What it does also at that point is it makes the owners of the business have a good, honest conversation with one another about how they see the business progressing and also about these key factors, you know, what should happen if this happens. And it really gets them to think about it and have honest conversations with one another. Look, this is what our expectations are. This is how we'd look to deal with it. And ultimately, when you reach agreement on that and you can document it, it usually prevents people having disagreements in the future. So the earlier that you do it is better, in my view.
Okay, thank you, Paul. There's a lot of information that you've shared with us today in great detail. If people want more information about shareholder agreements, how can they make contact with you?
Well, we're based in the centre of Tunbridge Wells. We've also got offices in Sevenoaks and Paddock Wood. We've got a website, which is at www.berryandlamberts.co.uk. If you head to the website, there's plenty of information on there about how you can contact us by email, by telephone. And once we get your inquiry, we'd love to speak to people so that we can help them get their businesses up and running and hopefully on the right course at the start so that we can avoid any problems and disputes further on down the line.
Thank you very much, Paul. I've been talking to Paul Reeder today, Managing Partner of Berry & Lambert Solicitors, who heads up the commercial department there as well. So, Paul, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Don't forget to listen out to more Berry & Lambert's podcasts in this new series of podcasts. I'm Paul Harvey. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Berry & Lambert Solicitors podcast series. To find out more about us, our services, and what our clients say, visit our website at berryandlamberts.co.uk. Berry & Lambert Solicitors is regulated by the Solicitors Regulation Authority and is a proud member of LawNet, the leading network of independent law firms promoting excellence and best practice. Please note that information provided in this podcast series does not constitute legal advice and serves as a general guide only. The law may have changed since this podcast was recorded. Listeners should seek legal advice from a solicitor who will take their individual and personal circumstances into consideration.